Good afternoon and welcome to Voice of the Public, the Wellness Confidential, made possible by Amador Health Center, working to keep the community healthy. Located at 999 West Amador, giving thanks to everyone for doing their part to stop the spread of COVID-19 through social distancing and wearing a mask. Available if needed, Monday through Friday, 8 to 4, 527-5482. Our guest today is no stranger to KRWG. She's been on a few times. We welcome registered dietitian and president of the Revitalize Project, Dr. Raquel Garcon. Welcome back to KRWG.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be back.
Let's start by letting folks know, in case they haven't heard a show that you've been on before, a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm a registered dietitian. I have a doctorate in health science, and I've worked in lots of different areas, corporations, profit, nonprofit, academia, government. I worked at New Mexico State University as an assistant professor for a while, and in my business that I own, I do training and consulting in the area of wellness and performance for mostly corporations, organizations, and their employees, but also in other realms as well. So sometimes I do try to do as much work as I can for nonprofit organizations and also to do some things here in our local community in New Mexico.
What was the inspiration for you to go down this path?
Well, when I studied, my undergraduate is in nutrition, and when I was in college, I was very much into weightlifting and bodybuilding. And when I realized that there was a nutrition degree, I thought, oh, this is going to be great. I'm already learning all of these great things about nutrition as I do bodybuilding. And I thought I knew everything. And when I got into the field of nutrition, what I realized is I knew nothing and I was doing everything wrong. And it just fascinated me and I needed to know more. And I just continued my studies, doing my master's in nutrition and then working for a while as a registered dietitian before switching things up, adding in my certified personal trainer, adding in more of the performance psychology, and then going back at the age of 40 to do my doctoral degree. So it's been a long path.
So we're actually talking about the future then, age of 40, obviously in the future for you?
Of course,
I want to let everyone know that our phone lines are going to be open for you today. So the number to call if you have a question for Dr. Garcon in the Wellness Confidential today, dial 575-646-2212. That's 575-646-2212. I'd say we have a lot of territory to cover. But I want to start by asking you to describe, how do you describe the Revitalize Project?
Well, I do training and put together programs for groups, and it's in the area of well-being, which can cover anything from physical well-being, which includes nutrition, exercise, and sleep, to more emotional and mental well-being. So I do a lot in the area of neuroscience of wellness and neuroscience of behavior change, and specialize in resiliency. So I do a lot of programs in resilience, but it's really about, you know, really organizing yourself to understand what your purpose is, what your values are, and how you can really align the behaviors that you engage in every day to help serve that purpose. So whether that's physical wellness behaviors, how you manage your emotions, how you manage your thoughts and your mind, because that's really the control center of what's really happening in your world. And so I just design programs to really help move individuals and groups of people towards living their best life and really thriving in that life.
I'm assuming all of that is in your book, The Business of You, Leveraging Business Principles to Thrive in Life, right?
Well, a lot of it is in there. I wrote that book because a lot of times when I go into businesses to talk about well-being and wellness and performance, the people that are working there think like, oh my gosh, this is so hard. I have to change so much. And what I really let them know is they already know a lot of these things because a business runs very, very similar. And so when I would give them examples around their business and things that they're already doing to have run a successful business or to run a successful department or to do really well in their position, and that they just needed to take those same principles and apply it in their personal lives, it was like, wow, I never thought about it that way. And so I wrote that book really just to break down a lot of these ideas that we think that wellness and well-being is so confusing and overwhelming, and it's really not. And most of us already have the foundation of what it takes to make it happen. We just really need to sit back, reflect, and start to use what we already know towards these wellness behaviors.
And that sounds very reasonable. So we'll dive into that, but I want to let everyone know that we have a copy of your book for someone who calls today with a comment or question at 646-2212. All you have to do is participate and we'll enter your name in a drawing for a copy of Dr. Garzón's book and describe this contraption that goes with it.
Well, what I will do is I will send you a book and I will sign the book and I will also send you a resistance band because it's really fun. It's basically a workout band and it comes with a little booklet and it shows you how to do a full body strength training workout just using this resistance band. And I have a picture, I think of, 12 exercises in the book, but you could probably do 100 exercises with that band without having to leave your house, without having to have specialized equipment or anything along those lines. So it's just one tool that is really convenient. It's always been convenient, but now even more convenient as we have more restrictions as to where we can go and what we have access to in terms of working out.
Absolutely, because social media, which we can also dive into in terms of how it's impacting our overall wellness. There was a person who's on my network who was saying that her weight was close to 400 pounds, and she was, you know, hoping that our area could reopen so that she could get away from that sedentary lifestyle. And you can't help but think, but even if you are stuck in your home, you don't have to be sedentary.
That's right. It is much harder, though, and everybody functions differently. So some people really have a hard time on their own, by themselves, getting up off the couch. Mm-hmm. There's so much entertainment right now going on that's available that it's really hard to motivate yourself when you're not accountable to anybody. You don't have that group effect. Some people are really motivated by being with other people and seeing them do things or having people watch them, which sort of holds them accountable and makes them work out harder. And so if you're one of those people that really thrives kind of in those social atmospheres or needs that accountability, it makes it very difficult to get moving in your own house.
Absolutely. Well, let's dive in first to something that we've been touching on over the course of the week as we've been promoting today's show, and that's how to keep our immune systems functioning as well as possible, especially now during a pandemic and especially amidst the presence of all of this sanitation.
Yes, it's a real conundrum, I'm going to say, because, you know, we know some of the basics of keeping our immune system up. You know, it's healthy eating, including high fiber foods and foods with vitamin C and getting vitamin D, whether that's from food or being able to go outdoors in the sun to get some of that vitamin D. We know it's exercise and stress management and some of those sorts of things. But specifically about the sanitation is that our gut microbiome, so the bacteria that we have in our gut, plays a huge role in our immune system. In fact, the gut is its own immune system, and it's called the second brain. And there's a lot of impact depending on the bacteria that we have in our gut in terms of our overall health. And there have been some recent studies to show that the gut can be protective against COVID-19 or help reduce your symptoms or progression if you do get COVID-19. The problem is that when you have a lot of hand sanitizers and all of these antibacterial products, is that inevitably it gets into your digestive tract, you know, whether it's through, you know, you're eating with your hands, you're just wiping down all of these surfaces, you're getting these antibacterial products into your system. And they're killing off not just bad stuff, but they're killing off your good gut bacteria. So in the presence of a lot of antibacterial stuff, you do increase the risk of what they call dysbiosis, which is an imbalance of your gut bacteria where you have some of the bad bacteria starting to overgrow and you don't have the beneficial bacteria to help out. And then that can compromise your immune system and just make you more prone, not just to COVID-19, but really just anything else that could compromise your immune system, which then makes you more prone to, you know, really just catching anything.
So let's talk a little bit about how we can promote the health of our bacteria buddies.
Yes. So one is just to be judicious with your use of antibacterial products. You know, really only use them when you really feel like you need to. Good soap and water is preferred. If you do have to use, you know, you might be in a profession where you do need to use a lot of antibacterial. It's just making sure that it's not getting contaminated into any of the food that you're eating or your dishes, your silverware, and anything that you would be putting into your mouth, including your hands. And then beyond that, you want to make sure that you are eating a diet that really helps contribute to healthy gut, which is very high fiber diet. So fruits and vegetables, nuts, beans, all of your legume family, that is all super good for your gut. The more variety that you can get in those foods, the better it is. Some people might also want to consider probiotics and prebiotic supplements, although not everybody should be taking those, and so that's where it can get complicated because right now it might be hard to see your doctor and talk to them about this. Mm-hmm. It's usually just better to try to get more fermented foods, have natural sources of things that are good for your gut. So if you can do more of home fermentation, just having access to fermented foods, that's really good as well. And then there are a whole bunch of other things that are bad for our gut. So, for example, a lot of the sugar substitutes that people use to try to reduce, you know, calorie consumption are not necessarily good for our guts. That can promote the growth of bad bacteria. Also, the consumption of really high processed, high sugar foods, a lot of red meat, those could contribute to an imbalance in the gut bacteria. And then just other things. Exercise actually helps enhance our gut bacteria. So if you can find ways to do safe exercise, either outdoors or in your own home, that does help promote good gut bacteria. Sleeping enough hours helps promote good gut bacteria. And then also managing stress. So when you get stressed out and you have all of this chemicals going into your system, those chemicals promote the growth of bad bacteria. And then what happens is the good bacteria can't grow. It's like a competition in that gut. And so the stress management techniques are also critical.
Let's talk a little bit about probiotics versus prebiotics. Can you explain what each one of those is and does?
Sure. Yes. So probiotics is the actual live bacteria that you would be ingesting that would then hopefully colonize within your intestinal tract. Those fermented foods, because they use bacteria, typically still have live bacteria cultures. Really accessible foods would be things like yogurt and kefir and kombucha and things along those lines. And so when you consume those foods, hopefully the good bacteria colonizes. But that bacteria needs food, so they have to be able to eat something. And prebiotic really is food that is specific to these beneficial bacteria. And that's why I was promoting the use of high fiber foods, because what happens is they typically process or use high fiber foods as their substrate of preference. And then what happens is as they're, you know, processing those sorts of things, they produce these substrates that have beneficial effects on our intestines. So for example, some of the substrates that they produce help create a nice intestinal barrier, a wall, so that things that are supposed to stay in the gut, and don't leak out of the gut into the bloodstream and then cause an immune response. And so when you have a lot of bad bacteria, what can happen is, if anybody's heard the term leaky gut, is it increases intestinal permeability. And the walls kind of open up and let things out of the gut into the bloodstream that normally wouldn't be there, which then causes your immune system to go on high alert and respond to that. So prebiotics is just a nice, convenient packaging of these food, of these substances that the bacteria like to eat, but you can get the same effect just by eating these high fiber type foods.
Starting to sound more and more like a little pet, you know, in your...
I know. Well, it is. It's pounds and pounds of bacteria in your gut. It's amazing how we have more bacterial cells than we do human cells. So we are much more bacteria than we are human.
Fascinating. You mentioned that some people shouldn't necessarily be taking probiotics or prebiotics. Who would that be?
Yeah, it's not as common, but I have to throw it out there because there are people who have had bowel issues, maybe short bowel syndrome. They've had some kind of an intestinal procedure where what happens is you take probiotics and instead of them reaching the large intestine where they're supposed to be, they'll actually stop and kind of colonize in the small intestine, and then they cause what's called small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which is not good at all. And so if you just happen to be one of those people that for whatever reason, whether it's been some, you know, intestinal issues that you've had in the past or a surgery, and those probiotics just won't get to where they're supposed to go, and then you have other problems that can happen. So you just need to know if you're one of those people that may not be a good candidate for taking probiotics, because then you have to go and cleanse with antibiotics basically all of the bacteria that's growing in the wrong place of your intestines.
All right. 646-2212, 575-646-2212. This is Voice of the Public. It's the Wellness Confidential on KRWG with Dr. Raquel Garzon, made possible by Amador Health Center, working to keep the community healthy, located at 999 West Amador Avenue, giving thanks to everyone for doing their part to stop the spread of COVID-19 through social distancing and wearing a mask. Available if needed, Monday through Friday, 8 to 4, 527-5482. So we've talked a lot about how our nutrition can impact our immune system, but so many other things are tied into the big picture. What would you say is the next most important thing on your list to keep our immune system strong and healthy?
Well, I always put sleep as number one.
Even before nutrition, yeah.
Even before nutrition, only because if you don't get enough sleep, it actually disrupts how your entire nutritional system also works. So although nutrition is important and complex and we want to emphasize it, you're really working against yourself if you're not sleeping the 7 to 9 hours of recommended sleep each night. Your sleep really is a huge factor to your immune system and what your body is able to do, repair, respond against. So definitely sleep. And then, of course, I would say exercise. We know that exercise is a great strengthener of our immune system, especially when you're doing exercise on a regular basis. So if you haven't done exercise in forever and then you go exercise binge, for 3 days, because that's sometimes what we do, that can temporarily lower your immune system just because your body is trying to adapt to that. So what I would say is if you haven't been exercising, to start, you know, with a lower to moderate intensity, get yourself in a consistent routine. And then when you start exercising with more intensity, whether it's interval training, strength training, whatever that might be, that has a huge positive impact on your immune system.
Well, let's get back to sleep, because that was something that was in the news pretty early on during the pandemic, because as people's daytime schedules were interrupted, it changed. Our nighttime schedules changed too, and it seemed like sleep was one of the first things that got disrupted by this pandemic. What can you say you've observed about that?
Yeah, I think what happens is, I think I mentioned maybe earlier that, you know, when we're overwhelmed or our emotions get upset, it can interfere with our whole sleeping system. And one of the ways that our system deals with stress or feeling like there's a threat in the environment is to keep you awake, because it doesn't want you to sleep through something that could kill you or be of danger to you. And so I think what's happened is that two things is, one, people are stressed and it does cause some inability to go to sleep. And so then they're watching, you know, whatever, you know, all of these great shows and all of these, you know, series and things along those lines. And we typically do that in the evening hours. And so they're just staying up later. And our system is just not meant to do that. So I've been hearing from clients, I've worked with, you know, I don't know, probably 1,000 clients through the pandemic in virtual sessions. And what I'm hearing from them is that even though they go to bed later, they're still not they're still getting up earlier. They're not getting enough sleep. And what happens is our circadian system, the way that it's designed, is we are supposed to go to sleep somewhere between, you know, 9 and 10:30 or so. That's just the way our hormones work. And then we're supposed to get up relatively early, you know, somewhere between probably 6 and 7:30 is what we're really kind of designed to do. And so anytime that we're working against that, it's going to have an impact. So I always tell people, even if you get 8 hours of sleep and you do it from 1 a.m. to 9 a.m., and you compare that from to 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., even though they're both 8 hours, you will not get the same effects, not to performance, not to health, not to the immune system, because we are supposed to get some of our hours of sleep before midnight. And the studies are very clear on that. And so we've just completely disrupted everything, and it is important to keep routines. It's important to get sleep, you know, when you're supposed to get sleep, which is during darkness. And then other things is that some people are just staying holed up in their places, and our system depends on going outside during the day, our eyes taking in sunlight to recalibrate our biological clock, the circadian system. And some people just aren't doing that. They're just staying indoors all the time, and it's really messing up their sleep.
Feel really bad for people who work graveyard shifts, and I mean, shift work in general, and sometimes they're changing around so hard on the body. All of a sudden, our lines are full. We have listeners holding to ask questions.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Okay.
So let's get started. Luann.
Okay.
Thank you, Luann, for waiting, and welcome to Voice of the Public.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. I was wondering, I've seen on the internet this doctor that has a book that's a bestseller, and he like says that you should watch out for lectins and not eat nightshade vegetables or fruits like, you know, like tomatoes and all kinds. There's like a whole bunch that you're not supposed to eat, and even beans and stuff. But like everything he says not to eat is like what I have. and I know that fiber is like super important, and so I was just wondering what you knew about that, if that is something to be concerned about. And then the other question I have is, I have an apple orchard and I have a ton of fruit this year, and I was wondering if apple cider vinegar is like one of those things that you said is like a fermented thing, or like a probiotic, like are there good health benefits for it? Because I want to make sure that I can use the apple as much as possible and make something beneficial for people.
Sure, great. Those are great questions. First, with the nightshades, there are people who have sensitivity to nightshade vegetables. So, but it's not like something that you would just say, oh yeah, let's have everybody, you know, eliminate nightshade. So it would be something that you would specifically work on because you've been having, you know, symptoms, intestinal issues. Maybe you're working on resolving some maybe autoimmune types of things that are going on. And so things like tomatoes and eggplants, potatoes, peppers, those are some of the more common ones. You know, are nightshade vegetables. And some people swear that when they take those out, their headaches go away or something along those lines changes. What I would say is, I mean, if you feel like you want to test that and take out nightshades and see if you see a difference, you can certainly get plenty of fiber and everything that you need, excluding nightshades, because they are very specific to, especially, you know, a lot of these sorts of vegetables, but there are plenty of other ones that you could use to get your fiber. So I would say that's pretty much a nuance, and I don't think that, you know, most people probably need to worry about that. In terms of the apple cider, I think, is a great thing to incorporate. It really does promote the growth of good bacteria. You'll see it in a lot of the kombucha recipes and a lot of the kombucha drinks that are out there. On top of that, these types of vinegars can also help what is called lowering the glycemic index of food. So it's basically how quickly food gets processed into glucose. That can help if you have blood sugar issues, diabetes, things along those lines. And so what I would say is, if you are like it, it's available to you, and you can incorporate it on a regular basis, and no issues there, I would say go for it for sure. And, you know, if you have lots of it, share it with your friends and make sure that they can get that as well. So, yeah, I would definitely suggest the apple cider vinegar as a go.
How much do we need a day to for it to be effective?
There's not really, this isn't one of those things that it's like, here's the dose that is, mm-hmm. Promoted or recommended. You know, I think most people, if they have it, would take, a teaspoon here or there. Some people literally drink it. What I do is I put it on my food. So when I have, for example, my avocado, I just put apple cider vinegar on it, and it's a great combination. So if you can put it on your salads, and find ways to incorporate it maybe into drinks that you might make and things along those lines, then I think that's just a more logical way to do it.
All right. And now let's go to our next caller. Captain has been holding with a question. Good afternoon. Thanks for calling.
Hi there.
How are you?
Hi.
I have two specific questions. One, are there, and if so, what specific types of foods interfere or interact with oral pain relievers?
Ooh.
I use ibuprofen randomly.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are specific foods I should or should not be eating in order to enhance the use of this oral pain reliever.
Yeah. From what I know, and you probably want to talk to a doctor or a pharmacist about this, things like ibuprofen typically are not the medications that dietitians counsel on food-drug interactions. It's more for things like anticoagulants. There are some thyroid medications, things along those lines. From what I know, from an ibuprofen perspective or those types of pain reliever anti-inflammatories, I don't know of any specific food-drug interactions, but I would feel more comfortable if you talked to a doctor or pharmacist about that.
So you're more not familiar with the way food, types of food, interact with various medications. Is that what you're saying?
Well, so you're asking specifically about ibuprofen.
Any type of oral pain reliever, not an injected.
And you said you just take it from time to time. How much are you taking at any given time?
Usually 800 milligrams, no more than 3,200 milligrams a day.
Okay, but that's
so,
every day.
So I'm just answering the question specific to ibuprofen. There are food and drug interactions with very specific drugs that dietitians counsel on, but they're each individual and specific. So I mentioned anticoagulants like warfarin. There are food drug interactions with that, but you're not asking about that one. So I'm trying to kind of guide you on ibuprofen. And as far as I know, I have not had to ever do a food drug specific counseling for ibuprofen specifically.
Okay. My other question is
okay.
People use various foods to relieve stress. Some chocolate, some ice cream, some fruit. As far as what food do you personally choose to reduce your stress?
That's a great question. I think that people really choose their foods based on maybe upbringing, maybe habitual association and things along those lines. I personally don't have any specific food that I use to relieve stress. I think maybe when I was younger, I may have used chocolate, but I don't really do that anymore. So, I think each person has their own, and generally, I try to help people find ways to relieve stress that are not necessarily food, alcohol, and related, only because it becomes an association, and it's not always a great constructive coping mechanism. So I do try to help people find alternative ways to cope with stress that are outside of food and beverage, if possible.
That's probably a good idea, yes. I do find, though, and I have to interject this, that when I eat sushi, I always feel better afterward. Maybe those omega-3s.
It's expensive and you've indulged in yourself, maybe.
That's right. All right, let's get to our next caller. Ruben okay. has been holding as well. Thank you, Ruben, for your patience, and thanks for calling. Good afternoon.
Sure. Hi. What is your opinion on using spices like oregano and turmeric and ginger and other ones like that help boost your immune system?
Yeah, I think that obviously a lot of herbs and spices, I mean, our first, you know, our medications that we first produced were all out of the kind of the herb family. So there are certain spices that can be very helpful. So for inflammation, for example, you mentioned turmeric. That is definitely one that has been shown in studies to help with inflammation. From an immune system perspective, you know, there are things perhaps cinnamon could be possible, although it's more researched in the area of diabetes. Ginger could be, you know, a possible one that you could use. So I do think that there are some benefits to herbs, teas and things along those lines, especially if they can help contribute to the healthy gut, which ginger is one of them as well. I don't know as much about oregano. I would have to literally look these up to see how much research there is to support them. But in general, spices and herbs don't have negative side effects unless you have a specific, you know, intolerance. And so if you have found spices or herbs, you know, peppers, for example, red chili peppers, have components that could be helpful as well. And you're finding that you get good results. It's definitely something that I would, you know, recommend and promote that you keep using. But in terms of really looking at research studies and the support there, I would have to look those up one by one to just kind of see which ones I could recommend from that perspective.
I'm trying to add cinnamon in, you know, to my, but taking that tablespoon of cinnamon every day is still impossible, you know.
It is hard. The doses that are required typically to get beneficial effects, so if you're looking at something like turmeric and you add it to your foods, you know, typically you're going to have to get some high-potency turmeric capsules to really get the dose-related response that you're going to find is supported in the research studies for anti-inflammatory. You know, I use oregano oil, you know, a lot of times when I'm starting to feel sick, but it's like a high-potency oregano oil. Oregano sprinkled in my food is not going to necessarily be enough. And so I think, again, like using the spices is great, but if you find one that is specific that you think works, the research supports it, you probably need to get something in higher dose, higher potency to really get the effects.
What resources would you recommend people to try to use in order to get those types of products that they would, you know, that they would need in order to do some good?
Yeah, I mean, first you have to, you know, find credible sources, and that is already difficult to do because the internet is so full of not credible sources. Mm-hmm. So that's why using going through a provider is helpful, and then just going to a health food store that is credible as well, but also going in armed with your own information, I think is kind of the best way that you can do that, and using brands that are bigger, that have more to lose, because these aren't FDA regulated either. So you have contaminants, they may not have the ingredients that they say they have in them. So you have multiple areas in which this could go wrong for you in terms of spending money and not getting the effects that you're looking for.
575-646-2212. We've already covered so much territory, but I feel like there's still a long way to go. Dr. Raquel Garzon on the line with us today, a registered dietitian and president of the Revitalize Project, and a copy of her book, The Business of You, Leveraging Business Principles to Thrive in Life, and the all-purpose exercise band. You can win today just by participating. So Luann and Captain and Ruben are already registered. 575-646-2212. If you would like to get a question in for Dr. Garzon before our time here is over today at 2 o'clock. So we've covered a lot about sleep and a lot about nutrition. What about exercise in terms of the overall importance during this pandemic of maintaining our best health?
Yeah, I mean, you want to incorporate two forms of exercise that have been shown to help the immune system. And one is aerobic training, which is very, very important. That's, you know, cardiovascular training, heart and lungs, just getting your heart rate up and keeping that heart rate going for a certain amount of time, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes or more, is very important, and doing that at least three times a week. And then strength training has been shown also to help the immune system, and it helps enhance what you're doing with aerobic training. And strength training is recommended twice a week, full body, chest, back, legs, shoulders, biceps, triceps, and core. So you want to find ways of working it. And what's great about the pandemic right now is that so many people are offering programs online and through apps that it's incredible. There is no lack of resources out there. Even in our own community, I know lots of people that are offering, you know, exercise programs live that you can follow along with. The gyms are offering a lot of virtual types of things, but you really do have a lot of options. And I think it's a matter of finding the importance of doing it. So what's your buy-in? Why would you want to do it? And number two is switching your mindset up to really align with getting you to do it. When are you going to do it? What time of the day? For how long? You know, making it fun, making it part of your day. I think that's really the biggest battle. It's not what to do and having access to things, although we like to use that as our reason. You know, we like to blame external things. I don't have access. I don't know how. I don't have the equipment. But really the biggest barrier is ourselves and not really aligning our day, our mindset to making exercise happen for ourselves.
Yeah, you mentioned not using any types of food as stress relief. Would you recommend that exercise is good for stress relief?
It is. I mean, if you are feeling, for example, angry and frustrated, so if you have like a what I call high arousal stress going on where you're kind of all fired up, maybe you've been watching social media and you're super angry, exercise is a great way to take that energy and then utilize it in a way that's going to be super, super constructive. Because the second you start exercising, it shifts that whole chemical response of being angry and frustrated, which is bad for your health, right? It releases chemicals that are literally bad for your brain and body cells. And when you start exercising, it shifts that energy into a response that's actually constructive and healing and repairing for you. If you are feeling stressed, but you have low arousal, that's a lot harder. Low arousal is when you're feeling kind of sad and hopeless and you're just feeling kind of dejected. That's a lot harder because exercise takes energy. And when you're not feeling energy, it's really hard to get yourself going. And that's where having a friend or a buddy or someone in your family to get you going. You know, that's why if you belong to like maybe a group, like a Zoom exercise group or something like that, is good because you have some accountability and it can really get you out of there. But one of the things that your system tries to do, as I mentioned, when you're overwhelmed and stressed, is to not exercise. It wants you to conserve energy for your emergency that you have going on. So it's a really tough battle. So what I would say is if you can find constructive ways to calm the system down and to focus on what you can control, what's positive, hope for the future, whatever it might be, that can shift your whole system so that you are, in fact, motivated to go out and exercise. You don't want to fight against yourself. You want to work with your system to find what's going to work for you.
While you may not recommend trying to use foods to de-stress, our diet certainly can contribute, probably in a very big way, to our overall mood, can it not?
Sure. I mean, I think that if everything kind of works together. So if you're eating super crappy foods and high fat, and I mean, that certainly can lower your energy. It can make you feel tired and sleepy. We know that when we overeat or eat the wrong combination of foods, we just feel sluggish. And when you feel sluggish, it's not just your body that feels sluggish. Your emotions feel more negative. Your mind feels sluggish. When your mind feels sluggish, it means you're not tapping into your best thinking and your most motivating, inspiring words to yourself. So it's confounding. You know, you eat crappy and it affects everything. And now you can't figure out what your problem is, right? Is it physical? Is it emotional? Is it mental? And so what I tell people is just start somewhere. Do something positive, do something constructive and see where it can lead you, whether that's exercising, whether that's getting enough sleep, moving yourself to a more positive mode. Anything that you can do that's positive will typically trickle into more positive effects.
All right. We're going to talk in just a minute about the fact that you're a finalist for a grant competition that would help teach folks right here in Doñana and Otero counties about our gut microbiome and keeping it healthy. But quickly to the phones we go, because Marilyn is holding on the line with a question. Welcome to Voice of the Public, Marilyn. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. My question is whether your guest would have any suggestions for someone with a mixed connective tissue disease in regard to how to deal with the cramping muscles and just overall health and nutrition. Anything special?
Is this an autoimmune type of connective tissue disease?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so if it's autoimmune, I definitely recommend that you meet with somebody, a functional doctor or somebody that can take a look to see if you have any potential food intolerances. So people with autoimmune disease will oftentimes have some kind of a food that triggers an aggravation of that autoimmune disease. And some of the bigger ones might be gluten, dairy, corn, soy. Those are some of the bigger ones. And it's really hard to find that out on your own. And these functional doctors can really help you out to do that work, to find if you have trigger foods. Because if you're constantly consuming trigger foods, it's not obvious. It's not like I consume this food and I have a flare-up. It's like it's constantly there, so you're constantly flared up. So that would be number one, because you have to take out things that trigger it. Number two is that the gut microbiome is huge for autoimmune, so a lot of the things that I've talked about from a gut microbiome perspective. And then, of course, focusing on more of the anti-inflammatory foods. So those would be things that have omega-3 fatty acids, so like your fatty fish. Incorporating things like the turmeric is something also that I would recommend. And then there's actually one diet out there that's specific to autoimmune disease, and it's called the autoimmune protocol. And it's a very specific diet that does eliminate a lot of the potential trigger types of foods. It puts foods into the diet that seem to support and help the immune system. It's a little bit strict, but if you find that you have good results with that, you typically just want to follow it. You don't even want to get off of it because you get such great results. So those would be my top recommendations.
Thank you, Marilyn, for calling.
I'm not clear on what a functional doctor is.
Okay, yeah, sure. So you can actually go online and look for a functional doctor in the area. I know we have at least two here. Are you in Las Cruces?
El Paso.
Okay, you're in El Paso. You probably have even more options there. So you literally just go online and look for functional medicine or a functional doctor. And what those doctors do, they might be MDs, DOs, they might be a nurse practitioner with a doctorate. But what they do is they try to get to the bottom, the root causes of your illnesses. So instead of just treating the symptoms and helping your pain go away or inflammation, they actually try to get to the root of what may have triggered your autoimmune disease or what might be triggering flare-ups. And they work with you from a functional, so it's how the body functions, that's why they're called that, to try to basically help you sort of from the inside out instead of from the outside in. And I think that those are great doctors for autoimmune issues.
Thank you so much.
You're right. Welcome.
Thank you, Marilyn. 575-646-2212, the number to call with the final 10 minutes or so that we have with Dr. Raquel Garcon. And I wanted to dedicate a few minutes to talk about the grant process that you're going through. And first of all, congratulate you for becoming a finalist.
Thank you so much. It was so exciting.
What's it all about?
Well, Siggy's, the yogurt company, Siggy's, if you've ever had their yogurt, last year started a program for it's to promote entrepreneurial types of programs for registered dietitians, and you basically submit an idea for a grant. And last year I applied and I didn't get it, and it was also on the gut microbiome. It can really be on anything in nutrition. I'm very passionate about the gut microbiome. And this year I applied, and I became a finalist, and I'm the only finalist in our area. Like, there's no one even close to our area at all. And what they do is they provide $20,000 to be able to help you get your program off off the ground and be able to implement it. And the program that I pitched, it's called Get Your Gut in Gear, and it's really a nutrition education hands-on food preparation course that we would be doing here in Las Cruces and also in, along the border in Anthony and also Chaparral, and then also at Mescalero as well, where we would do several classes. And in those classes, you would learn about the gut microbiome. You would learn about nutrition for the gut microbiome. And it's a hands-on food preparation class, so you learn how to actually create basically foods that have probiotic components and then also foods that have prebiotic components. And so if we win this grant, we'd be able to offer at least 6 programs here in the area, open to anybody who would want to register for that. And it's pretty cool. It would come with recipes for the gut. It would come with cookbooks. And then there's like drawings for fermentation kits and things along those lines. So I'm really excited about that because we know that in our state we have, when I pitched it, it was before the pandemic, and it was really based on the fact that we have a lot of people with obesity and diabetes in the area, and the gut microbiome actually plays a role in obesity. So when you have dysbiosis in your gut, you're actually much more likely to be obese and store fat, and you're actually more likely to develop diabetes as well. And so I just thought this would be a great program for our area. We really don't have anything like that at all available to people, and with the grant we'd be able to make this program available at no cost to the participants. So I'm really excited about it and hope I get it, and it does depend on voting. So 15% of the weight of the finalists in terms of who wins is based on public voting, and so if I get more votes compared to some of the other finalists, that goes into my score on whether I get the grant or not.
So how would one vote?
Well, it's a link at the SIGGI site, which I provided you, that hopefully you can provide to the listeners.
Ah, yes.
So they just go and click on it and basically go to Get Your Gut in Gear, and they vote for that.
And we will have that link posted for you at krwg.org shortly after Voice of the Public is over today. So we'll get that posted up for you. You can always click on there and follow the link and go vote for, again, the name, Get Your Gut in Gear.
Yep.
I like it. 646-2212. We have Kevin holding on the line with a question for Dr. Garcon. Hi, Kevin. Good afternoon.
Hi, this is Kevin with a question about, I'm a really spoiled old man. I don't have anything that is a problem other than my back and my joints. And I know what I can take. Well, you know, there's herbal combinations at work, and capsaicum is one, and turmeric is one, and I just discovered boswellia and ashwagandha. And anyway, my question is, I found this one. I had a bit of a personal injury, let's call it, where I really messed up my knee, and I went and got a MRI, and the doc who did it, said he prescribed this dichloroferic sodium topical gel, and I refuse to take drugs, you know, because there's always a reaction. And what I'm wondering is that a fluke that one works for me? I mean, I only use it, I don't know, it gave me 100 grams about 6 months ago, and I still have probably an ounce or two left or whatever. And is that probably just a fluke that there's one of the bugs at work?
You know, it's really hard to say. Everybody's so different, and what I tell people is if you find something that works, then you stick with it. But what works for one person may not work for another. So it really is hard to say.
Yeah. Let's go to our next line. Archie is holding. So good afternoon, Archie. Welcome to Voice of the Public. In our last few minutes, what's your question for Dr. Garcon?
Good afternoon, Dr. Garcon. I am a disabled veteran, and I have a question about foods. And I wonder a lot of times, why is there so many foods that have potassium? I have kidney disease, and I have a diet that I have to stick to, but there are always foods with potassium.
Yes, stand by and listen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So he's wondering about the potassium. Is that what he said with the kidney disease?
Yeah, that I guess finding a lot of things with potassium, which he can't have, right?
Yes. In kidney disease, typically you have to restrict your potassium intake in order to preserve the function of the kidneys. And it's very difficult diet. I think a diet for kidney disease is extremely restrictive. And there are a lot of foods out there that have potassium, and a lot of other people are looking for that potassium, especially as a salt substitute. It is just challenging, and that's why you have to work with a registered dietitian to really kind of figure out, you know, what are the foods that I can eat that aren't going to, and it's not just potassium, because we have to restrict phosphorus and sodium and a whole bunch of other things, which makes it super, super challenging. And so all I can say is that it is hard. You have to work with a registered dietitian. I worked as a renal dietitian for a while in the dialysis unit with these sorts of diets. And it's super, super hard. And especially if you've got just limited access and, those sorts of things. So again, like, there's just so much help that people in our community need. And, just overall, I would say this is why I'm so passionate about the grant. We just need more nutrition information, education, access out there for our community with all of the different issues that we're facing. And I hope to be part of that along with my other registered dietitians in the community.
Just a couple of minutes left, but I want to get Kathleen's question in. She's been waiting with a question for Dr. Garcon. Hi, good afternoon, Kathleen. What's your question?
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. My question regards what I understand is eczema and dermatitis can be also an autoimmune disorder, and I'm just wondering if diet can play a role in the healing of that, or at least the tamping down of some of those symptoms.
It absolutely can. So eczema is considered to be an autoimmune disease. I believe I just shared something about eczema and the diet on my Facebook, professional Facebook page, just yesterday or the day before, if I'm not mistaken. And so the same principles would apply that I just gave to the other person with the connective tissue disorder, which would be to really work to see if you've got food intolerances that could be triggering the eczema, making it worse. As I mentioned, the gluten, dairy, soy, corn, those are some of the top ones. Maybe working with a functional or integrative medicine doctor to help you to figure that out. A lot of times you can do your own food elimination, food challenge diet, where you take out some of the foods that have been deemed as potentially offensive, and then you start adding them in one by one, kind of like you do with a baby when you're introducing new foods to them. And then tracking how your eczema does, but also the stuff that we talked about with the gut microbiome can also be extremely helpful, and also the autoimmune protocol that I mentioned earlier. So eczema is an autoimmune disease that very, very often can be helped through changes to the diet.
It is 1:59, so we certainly did fly through this hour, and still with probably so much territory to go, so we'll have to do it again soon. But in the meantime, some last words about making it through this pandemic as healthily as we possibly can.
Sure. I think it's just, remembering your purpose, trying to step back, look at the big picture, align your mind, your emotions, and your physical behaviors to really support you and be constructive so that you don't come out the other side of the pandemic needing to do extra work for your health, whether that's physical, emotional, or mental. We want to try to use this time to become as strong as possible. That's what I would say.
And where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me at revitalizeproject.com. My email is Raquel@revitalizeproject.com. And you can find all my other social media there.
Thank you, Dr. Raquel Garzon, and the Wellness Confidential. It's been a great hour with you, and we appreciate everyone who listened today and who called with questions. Thanks to our engineers, Manny Gutierrez and Jacob Lockwood, for making it all come together. And we invite you to join us again next Friday at 1 o'clock for Voice of the Public. We'll be welcoming back Dr. Dolores Gomez from Memorial Medical Center. So we'll see you then next Friday again for Voice of the Public. Up next, it's Leora Zeitlin and Intermezzo by Request.